What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, Building Champions for Sports Medicine with Venice High School's Kristen Farrell, the athletic trainer at Venice High School, and they have done lots of cool things. I see lots of Instagram posts or Facebook posts or social media about how they're taking trips to Washington for sports medicine competitions and things like that. And so we're going to hear more about that and how they're doing some really cool things and how they built the program to be where it is. So this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Venice. Like as in Venice, California, V-E-N-I-C-E, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Venice, if you want to check out the story, the show notes, any contact information later on. So, Kirsten, without much further ado, why don't you tell us your athletic trainer's story?
Okay, I'm actually came to athletic training kind of in a backwards way. I started my career as an elementary school teacher. And I was actually working in Tokyo, Japan in international education and coaching, and found coaching much too stressful. So when I went back to get my master's in school counseling, I also did my athletic training curriculum at that time, ended up living and working in a boarding school in Europe for a couple years, found a ton of resources in winter sports rescue. I mean, we were trained in how to respond to avalanches, helicopter people off the sides of mountains, but I found myself missing the day-to-day of the football, the basketball, and decided to come back to the United States, where I've been at Venice since early 2002.
Okay, so when you graduated college, mm-hmm. you had an athletic training license certification?
When I graduated from grad school, that's when I sat for my athletic training exam. My first few years in education were purely elementary education and doing some coaching at the school where I was working.
Okay, so you were a certified athletic trainer and then went to Tokyo. Am I understanding the timeline correctly?
No, yeah, nope, other way around. I went to Tokyo as an elementary school teacher, came back to the United States to do my graduate work, and that's when I did my athletic training education at the University of Vermont. And then I ended up in Europe, in Switzerland, in a boarding school for a few years, and then came to California.
Okay, there you go. That's what I was missing there. It's like, all right.
No problem.
All right, so you said you came back to Venice. I'm interested in hearing a little bit more about the boarding school if we have a chance. But when you came back to Venice, what did the athletic training program look like?
The athletic training program at Venice was virtually non-existent. They had an athletic trainer for a few hours a week through an outreach program, a foundation that's called West Coast Sports Medicine Foundation based out of Manhattan Beach, California. And they provide athletic trainers for about 20 to 23 different high schools. Because as most people know, athletic training is sort of behind the curve in California. And I was purely the athletic trainer there for about 2 years. And then the principal knew I had a teaching background and said, hey, would you be interested in teaching an elective in sports medicine? We can sort of see how it flies. And that same year, I had three girls ask me if they could become my aides or my student athletic trainers. And so that was in early 2004. And then the sports medicine program has just continued to grow since that time. We started out with the three girls. The next year became about 12 kids. The following year it was 18 kids. And now I continually have probably 60 to 75 kids apply every year. And I only take 30 to 35. And we do everything from teaching them the basic skills, and they get to observe me as the certified athletic trainer. They get to practice their skills on each other. And of course, they're all American Heart Association professional rescuers as well.
All right, so the professional rescuer, do the kids have to end up paying for that? Does the school pay for that?
We usually do everything through grant writing and fundraising. We're not funded by the school at all. My teaching stipend is through what we call the Regional Occupational Program in Los Angeles Unified School District. And then my after-school hours are funded by the foundation that I've always been working with. And then the kids do a ton of fundraising. And then we have some nice people who are willing to donate to us on a regular basis to help us keep the program afloat. Especially our Booster Club on campus has been really awesome in the last 3 or 4 years. Giving us a large chunk of money to keep our program going because they know we help everybody. It's not just one team. It happens to be a team of kids who then help take care of a third of our school.
Wow. So your program is not funded at all by the school, but yet you've got 30 to 35 kids teaching sports medicine. They're professional rescuers. They're an award-winning program. So
yes,
we've done episodes before about grant writing, but that's definitely something I may have to come back and talk to you again in a completely different episode, because if you're getting all that taken care of, I mean, we do some fundraising stuff here and, you know, I've written lots of grants, but another expert in the field can only help the other athletic trainers trying to do things like you're doing. So,
right.
Just real quick.
Yeah. Grant money comes into play a huge, huge, and then getting your booster club to buy in has also been the second thing that's been the most important to us.
So just real quick, where are your top resources for grants?
We're due to the fact that I teach through the Career Technical Education Regional Occupational Program, Perkins is our biggest grant, which is a federal grant. And depending on how that works with the different schools in the district, you get to put on that grant your wish list for anything and everything, and then the state and the federal government decide what to allocate towards you. And that's huge if you have anybody who is a CTE teacher. That's a federal grant. It's run by your local state, and they should really pursue that opportunity.
All right, so Perkins for the CTE type grant. But
yes.
We're not CTE here. We are sports medicine, just an elective. But there are a lot of athletic trainers or sports medicine programs that go CTE. So that is a great option, a great reminder as well. Okay, so Kirsten, I've talked about some of the award-winning things. You've already talked about how you've grown the program. What are some of the coolest things that you have done with your sports medicine kids?
We're really lucky that we live here in Los Angeles. There's a ton of stuff that we can do. Most recently, on Friday, we just went over to UCLA, and actually an alumni from my program is now one of the certifieds over at UCLA. And so we got sort of a behind-the-scenes tour of the athletics facilities over there, their new football stadium, or their football building and practice area that they're built, that they're putting together, which is going to have one of the most gorgeous weight rooms I think I've ever seen on the planet. We also partner with UCLA Brain Sport. And the UCLA Brain Sport folks, their doctors their lead doctor is actually one of the authors on the Zurich papers, which will now be the Berlin papers. And so having our kids have access to that kind of person has been huge. When they come in baseline on our campus, our kids are hands-on with that baselining and are treated just like any of the other healthcare professionals. The most fun things we do nowadays is go to Washington. Washington State has a fabulous student organization, and they put on one of the coolest competitions I've ever seen. And it's a two-day competition symposium, and we take anywhere from 14 to 20 kids up every year. This will be our first year. We have to take a year off because of how it falls over our spring break this year. But it's fabulous for the kids to, one, get on a plane for the first time for some of them, to get outside of Los Angeles. Some of these locations are sort of rural, and for them to see something different, and then interact with 600 to 800 kids from all over.
All right, so talk a little bit more about the competition. I know you said you guys fundraise a lot to get there. What does that look like? Is it you only take 5 kids? You take all 30 kids? Only the kids that...
No, the Washington group... which is a Washington Career Technical Sports Medicine Association, puts together a competition that's similar to an ACADECA competition. You have a varsity 6 who take 2 written exams and a practical. Then you have 2 kids who test in PT. No, I mean not PT. Anatomy and physiology. Then you have 2 kids who test in medical terminology, 2 kids who test in emergency response, and then 2 kids who can be involved in things like interviewing and resume review. And then those are all differently scored and put together as your overall team score. So you have to have at least a minimum of 6 to go up. And sometimes, I think the smallest group I've ever taken was the first group, which was about 8 kids. And the most we've ever taken is 20.
So you've taken 20 kids to Washington for a competition.
Yes. Wow. I know a lot of people would be like, you're nuts to take a bunch of kids on a plane out of state. But I think it's really important, especially from my background growing up and living abroad, to get kids outside of their normal area as much as possible. And for a lot of kids, it's like an introduction to going a way to school and that sort of thing, because we try to tie in visits to colleges if there's one in the town. And the fact that they've created this awesome experience for them, and it's almost back in the day where we used to have to take practical exams. These kids literally are taking a written exam, and someone goes and pulls them out of a room and says, okay, follow me, and you go into a new room and take a practical, which I think is pretty cool, in the fact that they really get their skills tested by someone they don't know at all.
Do you happen to have the name or the link for the Washington State Student Competition?
It's the WCTSMA is their initials, and if you just Google that, it'll come up to their webpage.
All right.
But they do a phenomenal job in Washington State with student officers statewide, a leadership symposium that they do, a summer workshop. It's really what they do with high school kids in Washington is very impressive.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Do you know if there's people from outside of, I guess, the West Coast? Like, what if I wanted to bring kids? Could I do that?
Yes. We've had actually teams from Texas and Kansas and Nevada participate. And we actually have a day competition here in California where two teams from Kansas come on a regular basis. And sometimes I think California is a little bit easier to be a draw because you can come in and go to Disney. You know, you bring your kids out here for 3 or 4 days, and there's a couple other fun things to do. But we've had kids from out of state come to the California competition as well.
Because we've got here at GHAS, a local organization, we've got a quiz bowl, we've got a giant, like 1,300 student workshop on a Saturday, and they do a quiz bowl there and taping skills and all this other stuff. And so I think that's, if we were to work towards something like that, it'd be really cool. So
yes.
This April, I plan to take kids to Dallas, which is about 4 hours away, but it's a 2-night, 3-night trip. And again, we're going to be participating in their workshop, their competitions, and those things like that. And so I completely agree. If you have a student program and you have the opportunity to take them on an overnight trip, then it's a completely different relationship than when they're away from the school and they're with you overnight. And, you know, not everything's going to go perfect. Sometimes things are going to go poorly, but it's a completely different experience. And those kids will talk about that for forever, because we've taken kids camping, and some of them have never slept outside. Some of them never left the greater Houston area. And so, that's a great, great opportunity.
Yeah. So. It was funny because on Friday when we were at UCLA, Ariel, the girl who gave us the tour, who went through my program, it was the next year we went to Washington. And to this day, she still says, you know, she ribs me about the fact that it was the following year that I started taking kids to Washington and she missed out. So it's definitely a highlight for them.
Yeah, I got some of that too. Why didn't we do that stuff when I was there? Sorry.
We get
a little better every year. Sorry. That's what we do. So, all right. So we've been talking about some of the really cool things you've done. And I just mentioned sometimes things don't go well. So tell me about a time where one of these projects didn't go so well.
Projects that don't go so well. I've got to say I'm really, really lucky with my group of kids. We may not have performed so well, but I've never, knock on wood, had something blow up in my face. Part of the reason to be on my team is that you're a self-starter and you know what you can do and what you can get accomplished. So I have really good kids who are really involved and who are really enthusiastic about being on the team. I'm trying to think of something that now I don't want to jinx myself. But we have been very lucky in that things have gone extremely smoothly for us. If anything, it's been a financial issue where we didn't have the money at the time and we had to figure out a way to pay for it after the fact. But I think, like I said, knock on wood, that's the worst thing that's happened to us.
Well, that's good. And I think, again, that comes with your experience of being well-traveled and then just your leadership with expecting the kid and the way you run your program. So very cool.
We had a funny story. The worst thing that's ever happened to us is we were flying home from Seattle and one of my young men asked if he could go to the bathroom before we got on the plane and somehow ended up outside of security without all of his things. And I'm loading my team with the other chaperone onto the plane. And I'm like, you guys just go. Well, if we're not there when the door closes, we'll figure out a way to get this young man home with me. the other chaperone had his instructions to hand off the kids to the parents, that sort of thing. And as I was like the last one waiting, here he comes running around the corner with his shoes and his belt in his hand. And he had to convince TSA to let him through again. And the fact that my kids, when we travel in uniform or we travel in some form of matching, that they knew he belonged to us and where we were. So stressful, but we made it.
We haven't taken kids on a plane yet, but it was something I would like to do again. Mm-hmm. My wife was 21 before she ever got on a plane. And so it's something that I would like to have for these kids to have an opportunity to do while they're in high school and kind of associate that positive memory with me mm-hmm. and our program. So
you said I would definitely look into Washington's or California's competitions and kind of start that ball rolling now for conversations for next year.
Well, this year we just signed up for the West Texas Sports Medicine competition thing. It's an online test, which is mm-hmm. the same thing that came from Eli there out in California. So Eli Halleck. And so we're going to take that test this year for the first time and then see how that goes and kind of build from there. And so it's all these little pieces are coming together, stuff that I'd like to do. So we're working towards
Eli's competition is the one in California we go to. And obviously, depending on how you place at that competition, then you qualify for the nationals.
Yep. It'd be really cool to be able to take the kids out there and do that. So, okay. You take in 8 kids or 20 kids out to Washington, but tell me something about some of your proudest moments as an athletic trainer.
Oh, wow. Seeing the kids go on to do more in the field, whether it's in the field of orthopedics or the field of sports medicine or the field of physical therapy, we're still a pretty, I know in some ways we're not so young because we're 10 years old, but in a lot of ways we are still young because some of these kids are still in their early 20s. But to know that I've got students at USC Medical School studying or PT school in Boston or San Diego, or kids who are now out and working as certified athletic trainers is pretty cool. To see my kids come together in the face of adversity, which we went through this year, which was really tough. And knowing that this group of kids, no matter what they've gone through together, have a really good heart and a really good place where they all come from. Having my kids be the first responders out when they're away from school. Kids will come back and talk about, oh, this man had a seizure on the bus and no one knew what to do. And I cleared everything away and I told people to call 911 and I controlled the scene and I made sure something was under his head. You know, things like that where they're taking their skill set and applying it outside of athletics. Is really cool to get those stories back, or the letters from the grandma who says, you know, I slipped and fell and Allie knew how to treat me and we got to the hospital and the doctor said she did everything right. Those are cool. I've had kids for a couple of years in our history win Student Athletic Trainer of the Year Award out at Eli's competition, which is pretty cool to have one of your own kids named the best. But anytime I see them display their character and integrity, I kind of hope I had something to do with that.
Yeah, I think my favorite stories are when they've used the life-saving skills. Just recently, you know, we teach the entire freshman class how to do CPR, and this isn't my athletic training kids at all, but mm-hmm. and so then this girl ended up using it, the skills that we taught one morning, to save her mom's life. Her mom was choking on food, and just hearing that story, knowing that. But I've had several of my students come back and, you know, hey, I was at work and I had to do CPR on somebody because nobody else knew what to do. And, you know, those kind of stories are like, you truly have impacted many lives by what you're teaching. And so by being part of this program, your life is completely changed and forever. So mm-hmm. those are definitely some of the proudest moments I have. So,
and that's very cool. Does Texas have a CPR as part of their high school curriculum now? Because I know we're talking about that here.
One of the state bills was that they have to be exposed to it. Mm-hmm. And so that requirement can be fulfilled by showing a YouTube video during health one day. So they have to be exposed to it once in their 4 years in high school.
Yeah, I think we're having a conversation about making it becoming certified as part of their graduation requirements. It'll probably take us a few years, but I think it's a very good idea.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. You just have to figure out who's going to pay for the certification, or if American Correct. Heart is going to just say, okay, well, we're going to certify all high school kids for free. Well, that'd be awesome too. But
yeah, we're piloting it this spring with our freshmen and the fire department. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. It's been a really cool experience, and I have a video up on YouTube about the whole event that we do here, and then also it's Mercedes' story where she saved her mom's life, and so you can check that out if it helps at all. I mean, it sounds like you already got your plan underway, so.
No, anything to help convince the folks at the top is always helpful in a district our size.
All right, so Kirsten, somebody wants to do what you're doing, build a program like you're doing, maybe take kids on a trip. What are some of the things, the best tips that you have if they want to follow your lead?
The first thing I would say is the most important thing is to get your administrative buy-in. I think that was one of the bigger hurdles for me out here in California, is that I work in a school district that if you are a product of our school district, meaning you've been born, raised, educated, and have come back to work in Los Angeles Unified School District, you have no clue what an athletic trainer is still to this day. So a lot of it in the beginning, I was very lucky. My first principal was total buy-in, but our subsequent principals I've had to teach and educate. So it's really important to make sure your administrators know who you are and what you're doing. And obviously that varies from state to state and situation to situation. The next is parent buy-in, because if you've got parents behind you, it's amazing what they can do to get the administration behind you if you're still stuck. And then obviously you would assume that you already have your student buy-in, and they're the ones that are the most excited. And if you can get them passionate, and you've got the parents with you and you've got the admin with you, then you can basically move mountains to make anything happen. And then it's just sort of doing the nitty gritty of your paperwork for your district and fundraising. And you would be surprised, even the smallest fundraiser can go a really long way.
All right. So you're talking about the admin buy-in. I did a podcast just recently with one of our school board members talking about how we can get administrator buy-in. And I've done it with a couple other, you know, administrator types. And so they've seen some of the stuff we do. But what is one of the ways that you have built administrator buy-in?
By communication. I think if I continue to communicate exactly what I'm doing all the time, anytime a doctor's report comes in on any of my kids, it is a shortened version of what happened in that report is sent to the administrators, so that they're aware of what we're doing, and how we're protecting kids and how the kids are happy with us. We're visible, even though I am one person on a campus. I can have 6 to 8 events going on. So I will have my sports medicine students on sidelines with radios to radio me when there's an injury that needs an eval, something beyond handing off a bag of ice or putting on a Band-Aid. So that's really important. So the administrators and the parents see you out there and active. And then going after, I know people are sort of mixed on the National Sports Safety School, but that was a big deal for us because we're the only school district in we're the only school in our school district with that award from NATA.
Okay, so when you said you communicated all the doctor's notes, so mm-hmm. a kid comes back with a doctor's note and you send an email to, like, just a blanket email to the principal, to the athletic director, like, what does that look like for you?
It's a shortened email that goes to my principal because she likes to follow up on kids who have been hurt, my assistant principal in charge of athletics because he has to make sure all the documentation from the district side is taken care of, and my athletic director so he is looped in as well. And when you're sending them multiple ones, they're seeing that your kids are being taken care of. Usually the clinic that puts me on campus also runs a free treatment clinic for the kids on Saturdays as well, so that the administration gets a very clear picture of anywhere from 2 to 8 to 10 to 15 kids went through our clinic on Saturday for treatment, evaluation, rehab, that sort of thing.
Okay, I got you. And then you said parent buy-in and then building passion in the students. What's one of the ways that you build passion for sports medicine athletic training in the students?
I think the kids see that if a teacher is willing to go above and beyond, because I do teach full time during the school day, and I'm the lead teacher for the Sports Medicine Academy on campus, that if at the end of the day I still have this energy and I still want to be out on the sidelines and I still want to be with them, and we have a good time. I mean, we consider ourselves a little family. We have family dinners when we have night games. And so I think the kids, especially in today's day and age and in the environment I work in, a lot of kids don't have that adult who wants to sort of just hang out with them in a professional way and share knowledge and share stories. So especially for my kids who come from either like the foster care system or a single parent home, I think that's a very big deal for them. And the fact that we have really good time out covering games. And it's fun, even if it's baseball and they're throwing X number of pitches and nothing seems to happen for an hour at a time. We still have a really good time doing what we're doing.
All right. And then I've talked to somebody before, Chris Shattuck here in Dawson. They have an awesome sports medicine program. And he told me that he tries to not involve the parents. And I think that just, for him, it keeps things cleaner than they're not, it's like less drama, that kind of thing. So what are some of the ways that you build the parent buy-in, but keep from the political, like, oh, well, you gave him the top seat in the academic thing because his parent donated the most money. Do you have any situations like that?
That's everyone's equal no matter what. I don't care if your parent wrote the check for everything. If your kid can't test and pass the test that they need to for the subject area they're testing in, they're not getting that seat. And that's, I'm very upfront with my parents at the beginning of the year about what I expect. To be honest, I think I've only had two parents in 10 years try to leverage the fact that they were overly active parents. But Venice, California is a very different environment. And I think public school in LA is a very different environment. We literally have maybe one famous kid on our campus. And so most of our parents are so appreciative of the fact that their kids get this sort of hands-on real world opportunity that I don't have politics involved at all. And I think a lot of your parent involvement depends on your environment. And I mean, LAUSD is a very unique situation.
All right. Very good. Kirsten, somebody wants to get a hold of you. What's the best way to do that?
The best way is probably just to email me directly. They can either email me through my school email, which is the letter K, the letter S is in Sam, F is in Frank, 3700@leusd.net, or my Gmail, which is my full name, Kirsten Farrell, 2R's 2L's@gmail.com, or Instagram, Venice Sports Med. We're there too.
All right. And if someone wants to follow more of your program, like you said, I know you have a website. What is that?
Our website is lacking at the moment. our venicesportsmed.org. But to be completely honest, that's might be where we're lacking the most this year. Where we only really have our schedule of what the kids are working when up on that site. Instagram is probably the most recent of anything we're doing.
And Instagram is
Venice Sports Med.
All right. So if you want to get a hold of Kirsten Farrell, she gave you her email, ksf3700@lausd.net, or Instagram. She said she likes that the best, so Messenger on there. If you got some more questions about the competition in Washington, some of the programs she's built, some of the awards she's done, even some of her trips or living abroad teaching in Tokyo, then you can hit her up there. We are right around the corner from March, which is National Athletic Training Month. There will be lots of different prizes being given away on the Sports Medicine Broadcast. So check out sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/NATM. So that's sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/NATM for ways you can win prizes. Anybody can enter. Some of them are essential oils. So I don't know, Kirsten, if you want your kids to enter, maybe you can win some more stuff for your program. Literally whoever registers, you know, we'll just go through the raffle and select a random winner and go from there. And the more they share it, the more they win. So this episode is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Venice, and that will give you links to some of the stuff that Kirsten talked about. Kirsten, thank you so much for joining me and sharing your knowledge. For Jeremy, Kirsten, Katmar joined us briefly. That is a wrap.